5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome into Morning Invest on this Thursday morning. There are some key recession warning signs that we're going to talk about this morning. And this isn't like clickbait, hey, watch this show because of this. No, these are some big indicators right now. And Jerome Powell appears to be on the path of going back to 1970s style inflation. And what does this mean for the broader economy? You're going to want to pay attention to this on the show today.
Plus, there is news that Hillary Clinton's campaign, plus the Democratic National Convention, or committee rather, has paid fines for using the Steele dossier against Donald Trump's campaign. This is really interesting because as much as the media wants to make this seem like it's really nothing, depending on what side of the media you watch, it does seem that there is something there. So we're going to go over what that is.
And if you want to get into Europe, just pretend that you are a Ukrainian refugee. There's a cottage industry that has exploded selling fake Ukrainian passports. We're going to show you some of these videos of these families who are clearly not Ukrainian, and they are clearly not 60 years old, who are trying to get into Europe. All of that and more as Morning Invest starts right now.
Welcome into the show. It is Thursday, the 31st of March, the end of Q1, so do your books up appropriately. Remember that we have a free morning newsletter. It covers all the news that we talk about here, plus a lot of other fun tidbits. For instance, was President Trump's hole-in-one real or fake news? You decide. You can find that at morninginvest.com.
That's right. All right, let's get to our big story of the day, which is recession warning signs. So I'm going to put this headline up here on the screen. And this is a really important story. I want you guys to pay attention to this because it really could affect your family. It could affect the next year or 2 years of your finances, your planning, your savings. What are you going to do to send the kids to college? All of that is going to be affected in the next few months. So something really interesting happened. We're going to get to, but I want to give you the broader big strokes first. Then we're going to get into a really interesting phone call that happened on an earnings call. But here, look at this headline. 5 and 30-year Treasury yields invert for the first time since 2006, fueling recession fears.
So what does that mean? It means that there's more interest in a short-term Treasury bond, which is you buying a bond that lends the government money, and the government decides it will give it back to you, right? Either at a high rate of return or a low rate of return. So that means 5-year bonds for the first time are outpacing 30-year bonds. Why is this?
Well, should we go to the whiteboard?
Okay.
Let's go to the whiteboard. So if you're listening to the audio version of this, I'll try to articulate what I'm going to do here. So let's get out the whiteboard here and go to it. So let's do a curve, okay? So let me just show you. Normally, this would be the curve that you want. So this is the normal way of making money, right? Here's your yield over here. And then this is the maturity date of the asset you're buying. Sorry,
it's kind of off the screen on the left.
Oh, sorry.
It's okay. There we go.
Sorry.
He wants to give himself a lot of space.
Okay.
There we can see it.
There we go. Okay.
But I do appreciate you labeling the axes.
Yield, thank you. Yield is over here, and the maturity of this asset is here, right? Normally, you would buy it, right? And you hope that, okay, over the life of this curve, this is a normal, healthy looking curve that, well, I'm going to sell it when I'm like 65 years old and I'm going to make some good money because the yield will be higher and it matures here, right? That's what you would normally want, right? Well, an inverted curve is not good. Now, let me show you the opposite of that. Sorry, let me get rid. I wish I had an easier way of doing this, but I don't. So here is what we're seeing right now. Here's the yield. Here's the maturity. And here's what we're seeing now. So that's not good. That is not good. That's an unhappy face. So you're basically buying it higher and getting it when you sell it down here.
Right, which is changing the demand for these types of investments, which are typically thought of as a good way to diversify your assets because they are more secure or more predictable than, say, some kind of stock-based fund for an actively traded stock. And so investors will take usually, like, you know, 30% of their portfolio and put them in these government bonds that they think are a safe bet because they pay out, I'd say, conservatively in the 2.5%. And so now people are realizing the United States, to put it simply, may not be good for it, right?
Right.
We don't know how long the dollar is going to be something that you can bank on, that I can put a dollar in the bank and get a dollar back, that I can lend a dollar to the United States government and get 250 back. That's not a sure thing any longer. And so investors see that. They're reading the writing on the wall. Usually that is a tremor for something bigger to come.
Right. So the U.S. curve has inverted before. And the reason we say these are warning signs is because when this has happened, when this curve has inverted, it has happened before every recession we've had in the United States since 1955. So follow history. Okay, that's what I want to talk to you about. I mean, you have to be a student of history here. It's happened every time. Every time since 1955, and it's occurred a recession. Once this inverted curve has happened, we've seen a recession about 6 and 24 months later. Now, we don't even need really to predict this. We know it's already happening because Jerome Powell has already said in their move to raise interest rates that this is coming. That means a slowing of the economy. You already see it in the housing market. You see it in prices across the board and the rising cost of gas. President Biden today about to unleash about 180 million barrels of oil from the strategic oil reserves. So price concerns at the White House. Jerome Powell was asked this very question on prices and where does he see, like, what is his plan here? And he really gave the answer that Senator Shelby was hoping he maybe wouldn't give.
Is the leadership at the Fed under you and the Fed prepared to do what it takes to get inflation under control and protect price stability?
Well, let me say, I knew Paul Volcker. I'm pretty sure I saw him testify in this room many years ago. I think he was one of the great public servants of the era, the greatest economic public servant of the era. And I hope history will record that the answer to your question is yes.
So you're prepared to do what it takes without any reservation to protect price stability?
Yes.
That would be a departure of what you've done. Thank you very much.
Ouch. Ouch.
Well, let's sort of define what we mean by recession, right? Because already we have inflation. So the normal average person's dollar goes less far, buys fewer things, right? But a recession is something that would affect everybody. We can see that inflation is affecting people at very different rates, right? There are certain classes of Americans that do not seem to be deterred, where this inflation is no more than a speed bump. So are we talking about a recession that hits everybody?
It appears that way. I mean, the recession arguably would hit everyone. Of course, it won't hit the wealthiest, right? The wealthiest Americans, you know, they're going to be fine, of course, because when inflation rises and those that own those large businesses, prices go up, they get to take five Doritos out of the bag and still charge you for the same amount of Doritos, right?
Right. Or, you know, the saying goes, when the going gets tough, the tough goes shopping, right? Mm-hmm. So there will be investors who've been waiting for a bottom to fall out of a market to swoop in. I'm not talking about those people, though. I'm talking about how we're going to define recession, because by many measures, we're here.
We're already here. And this is what I wanted to talk about. So I think this is a really interesting thing that happened last night. during the, I didn't even know that Restoration Hardware changed their name. Did you? To RH?
No.
Did you know that? I didn't know that. So Restoration Hardware changed their name to RH a while ago. And this morning is the way the Bloomberg paints it. Everyone's been talking about this earnings call last night. Now, I don't know if you know much about earnings calls, but when you are the CEO of a company and you go on your quarterly earnings call to talk about the state of the company,
yes,
to talk about your quarterly results, you do not fly by the seat of your pants. And when you fly by the seat of your pants, like the SEC comes knocking. Like, you've got to stick to the script. You've got to talk about what you expected on your numbers and what you expect going forward, your quarterly guidance. You do not go off camera. You do not go off script. So it was with great interest that people are paying attention to what happened with Gary Friedman. Now, Gary Friedman, on this call, just last night for his earnings call, talked about the really ominous he used. And he talked about it in terms of like The Big Short, the
yes.
movie, like the, or, you know, the book by Michael Lewis, but the movie like The Big Short. Like, we are really seeing ominous macroeconomic signs. And he likened what he was seeing to The Big Short. And a lot of people are like, whoa, did a CEO of a major company just say that? And he says, specifically what we've noticed at our retail establishments, number one, is just like, no one's coming in. Like, no one's shopping at our stores.
Okay, but also the couches start at $10,000.
No, they're not that expensive.
Yes, they are.
They're not that expensive.
I mean, okay, but...
Okay.
So that has nothing to do with it. I mean, he also talked about how shipping crate prices are doubled and then doubled again, right? So for retailers such as his, he cannot import things from other places, and a lot of that stuff is not made in the United States. So is this applicable to all business models, or just the sort of luxury high brand furniture that's shipped from Indonesia?
I have to think it's across the board, and it's only going to get worse, as you hear from Chair Powell. We know that these prices are going to continue to go up. Inflationary pressures are going to continue to rise upwards of, you know, seven, like the actual rate at 7% now. Imagine 10% probably in the next few months,
mm-hmm.
right? Not very far off from where we were in the 1970s, that, you know, when we hit like 17-18%. So there's all this talk right now about Paul Volcker and kind of going back to this, you know, not being afraid to raise interest rates to kind of keep up with this pressure of a crisis. But guess what happened? We went into a crisis.
Yes.
We were in a crisis. I mean, so much so that, you know, the famous Jimmy Carter malaise speech, even though he didn't say the word malaise, it was portrayed that way. He goes on television. He's like, look, I know you're all sad. And it was like, womp, womp, you know?
Yes.
And people couldn't afford gas. They couldn't afford homes. It was a really dark time. And I think, you know, the signs are pointing there again for people. So we need to be paying attention to this.
Now, he says that drop in demand corresponded with the conflict in Ukraine and Russia, which also, it's really hard to connect these dots between Restoration Hardware's high-end design shop and this conflict, right? And especially because... I'm having a hard time like connecting this as a meaningful event, other than a CEO sees something that, you know what I mean? Like, what is it we're reading into? Because he's going wild.
Well, I think the fact that he is making these larger macroeconomic considerations on a conference call, on a quarterly earnings call, that you do not go off script,
mm-hmm.
and he's likening it to the coming days, what he's seeing in the economy around the time of 2008. And the 2008 collapse. And he's seeing it, and he's sounding an alarm bell about it. And I think we should all pay attention to it. You know, no one listened to Ron Paul, then Senator Ron Paul, when he was sounding the alarm bells about what he was seeing in the economy. No one was listening to him.
Yeah.
No one was listening to him when he talked about the insurance market that could collapse as a result of the housing market. No one was paying attention to him. So here's a CEO who's watching these numbers on a daily basis. He's seeing this bond yield inversion. He's seeing what's happening at his stores. He's seeing what's happening in the supply chain. And then, oh, by the way, we've got Ukraine and Russia.
Yes.
On top of all of that. And so I think there, you know, there's a lot of interest there. And hey, I want to bring it to people's attention. But you don't even need to listen to the CEO. Just look at what's happening in the market. Look at what's happening with this inversion yield right now to know that the curve has inverted before every recession we've had in United States history.
Yes.
When that's happened, we get a recession. Well, it's happened again. So do we just simply ignore it?
Well, one thing that I thought that he said was interesting was that, you know, retailers will not be able to import quality products anymore, which indicates that the United States does not make quality products on their own shore. And what you'll see then is retailers trying to plug that gap with poorly made products in its place, indicating anything made in America is poorly made. And so, like, just don't get used to your nicely made, wood from Indonesia anymore. Yeah. Like, that's not going to happen.
Well, we saw that last time, right? You guys remember we saw that during the last recession when there was like this big push to like buy a made in American stuff. But there's just like, we would do segments on Fox where we'd had like the made in America segments.
Oh, I remember the pedicure boots.
I mean, they were awful. I mean, there were like literally few items that we could even highlight that were well made or useful. I remember even like,
well, and most of them now it's like, you don't think it says made in America
are useful? It was these like snow boots that they had, like, the, you know, this layout of things that were made by American entrepreneurs. And one of them were boots that you wear to get a, like, snow boots that you wear to get a pedicure.
Like that you take to get a pedicure? They give you a pedicure?
You put snow boots on, you take them to get a pedicure, but the toes were ripped out so that you could paint your toenails and then walk out.
I'm not even laughing.
Sounds like sandals with more steps.
It basically is. They're like, if you live in cold weather, I mean, you guys just Google it, pedicure boots.
Okay, but anyway, David, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, made in America now, it's like, it says made in America, assembled in China. So it's like, they're still using Chinese parts and everything. So it's like, made in America, when like with Tonka trucks and stuff, it used to mean something. But now it's like, American made doesn't mean anything anymore to me.
Yeah. And so again, it's such a global economy. This part comes from this country. This part comes from that country. You put them all together. It might be assembled in America, but none of these things. And this idea that we're going to start to bring all kinds of manufacturing back to the United States is just laughable. It was laughable during 2008. It was not going to happen. I mean, you literally, we had like Fox News anchors who were like, would do these segments, and I'm not going to tell tales out of school and who name names, but people like, not me, would come in after doing a segment. They're like, man, this stuff is crap. Like, what is this stuff? Like, this is all we have to offer.
Yes.
Like, the only thing that was worthwhile was like these work boots. That was it. The other stuff was like crap.
I mean, well look at Apple. You think Apple's going to bring their manufacturing to the United States? Like, because their profits would go way down with the wages that they'd to pay and all that stuff. These companies are not incentivized to do that at all.
Yeah. And it's not even just the wages, right? I mean, it's the laws. There's a whole bunch of things that go into that. And there's no way that ship has sailed. That ship has sailed to Mexico and to Vietnam and to India. And that is not, you're not putting that horse back in the barn, however many other metaphors I can think of but that's not going to happen.
Well, it's just another highlight of the fact that our global economy is interconnected. Everything we buy is geopolitical, and it does seem to be unsustainable, and how it's going to like collapse out from underneath us, we're about to see.
We have more news to get to, but I want to tell you first about, you want to get some free money right now. Today is the last day. Today is the last day that you can get some free money from our friends over at Moomoo. Right now, they're offering up to 5 free stocks and an extra additional bonus stock. Today is the last day you can get it on March 31st. So grab it today. Sign up for free by going to morninginvest.com/Moomoo. You get those 5 free stocks plus a bonus stock. And again, even if you do nothing else with the account, you've just gotten free money. So hold on to it, see what these stocks do in this economy right now, or sell them for cash and transfer it to your bank. Like, you don't have to keep it there, but you get some free stocks just for opening the account. And then once you make your initial deposit, you get additional free stocks plus that bonus stock. But, even if you do want to start using it, I love their platform because zero commission trades. Really great trading experience. Their apps are fantastic. And they have all sorts of great learning resources and courses that you can take as well. Just click on the Learn button at the top and go to their lessons and their library of all courses that you can take for free. So maybe times are tough right now, but you could get some free stocks and then spend a few hours on the weekend just going through these courses and learning about how to build wealth, right? And then in a few months, maybe you make your first trade. Maybe you buy something small and you learn how to do it properly and you start to build wealth. That's one way to do it. So check them out right now and get that free stock because today's the last day you get that bonus stock. So go to morninginvest.com/Moomoo, morninginvest.com/Moomoo. You have to use that link to get those free stocks. So our thanks to them for supporting the show. All right.
Well, the popularity of the war in Ukraine and Russia has surpassed the popularity of other wars that it seems the media doesn't care much about. For instance, the war in Yemen, the war in Ethiopia, the war in Syria. I could go on. But the world is very interested in helping Ukrainian refugees at this moment, which is a very lovely sentiment, right? So governments around the world have opened their borders to refugees from Ukraine while keeping them closed to refugees from other conflicts, which have raged for longer and are bloodier. Well, there's some unintended consequences of that, is that other refugees who've been in a long line for help and didn't get any are now seeking to prove that they are Ukrainian so that they, too, can skip the line. And I just want to say, can you blame them?
No, and look, we can't color everyone here with the same brush, Lex. There are definitely people who are in war zones, right? There are definitely people coming from regions that the world has ignored. You know, the Ethiopias of the world, the Syrias of the world, the Libyas of the world, like places where we're happy to go and have our wars and try to get rid of a quote unquote dictator and install our own proxy government. But who cares about the refugees, the people that are dying of cholera, which is what's happening in Yemen right now. So those people, yes, I absolutely support those individuals. Then there's, of course, the other crop of people that's seeing an opportunity here to come from other countries that are just, oppressed, have famine, wars, other problems, and deciding to come to Europe to take advantage of this. So this is,
well,
just,
because right now the Ukrainian passport is a get out of, I don't want to say jail, it's a golden ticket around the world, right? Because most governments are willing to open their borders. In fact, I believe in Denmark now, the royal family has said they'll open up the castle there. So, while other areas of the world have passports that you can call C-level, D-level, or below, well, who can blame anyone from wanting that Ukrainian passport?
Well, how many Syrian refugees do they have in the castle, just out of curiosity?
Oh, no, none. I don't think they have any.
No. Oh. That's the thing. It's
not even
maybe
a token.
Work there.
Not even a token Syrian refugee.
A token Syrian.
Right. Like, hey, I just got a Syrian refugee, so I can virtue signal about it. I mean, I love Benedict Cumberbatch. I think he's a great actor, but even he a number of years ago had tweeted about, said he was going to take in Syrian refugees and then looked into it and decided not to. And now he's once again, I mean, he lives in a like $12 million mansion, right? Plenty of room for these additional, Syrian refugees to come in. And then he's doing the same thing now about Ukraine. I'm going to bring Ukrainian refugees to my house. We'll see if he looks into it and decides not to do that again. Anyway, right now, the numbers are pretty stark. Here's the latest details on this. 30% of Ukrainian refugees are actually from other countries. And Sweden, for instance, like, hey, come on here, we're going to ban all refugees unless you're Ukrainian. And now you can imagine why people are taking advantage of this. This is an Irish family that look, people have kind hearts. People are opening up their houses to refugees, right? Mm-hmm. They're saying, we want to help, right? We want to help these people. We're seeing all the media coverage of it. We didn't even know about Yemen, but we want to help these people. So I'm not going to discount what these people are doing. They have kind hearts, okay? But then they're being duped. So here's an Irish family. This one's going around. Steve Laws tweets this. Ukrainian refugees arriving in Ireland.
Yes.
Now, remember, almost the entire country of Ukraine is white.
Yes.
There's like no people of color that live in the country of Ukraine. I mean, and I know that's saying being pretty general, but that's pretty much accurate. Like, there's no people of color that live in the country of Ukraine.
Well, I don't think that's true. In fact, the most recent Ukrainian uprising in 2017 was led by someone of Afghan descent. They do have brown people in Ukraine.
Okay, maybe 10 of them. But I think the
Ukraine actually prides itself on the fact that you don't have to be ethnically Ukraine to be Ukrainian to be accepted into normal society.
Okay. So here's the Here's the Gaelic team, which we're delighted. They've tweeted this. We're delighted to have the opportunity to welcome a group of brave, resilient people to Dr. Hyde Park today. They've traveled to our town to find refuge from the horrors of the war in Ukraine. And then they deleted the tweet because they found out these people are not Ukrainian. I mean, do they, don't exactly okay, but necessarily
it doesn't have to do with skin color is what I'd like to just throw this out, right? You don't have to look Ukrainian to be Ukrainian.
Okay. True. You don't have to look Chinese to be Chinese.
Yes, I guess. Sure.
Okay. But when you have a fake passport that is not Ukrainian and you're pretending to be Ukrainian and you don't look anything like the passport you're holding in your hand, then that's a problem. So here's an example of these refugees arriving that don't exactly have the skin color of the actual passport they're holding.
Yes. Okay. Yes, but...
D'accord, okay. Donc ça, vous me dites que c'est vous? D'accord, okay. Mais il y a combien de temps?
Ah, il y a longtemps.
Il y a longtemps? Ah oui, ça doit être il y a très longtemps.
So that, yeah, that is me. That's me 10 years ago. Yes, that's me.
That's okay, me. But I don't think we should blame anybody here that's actually trying to take advantage of these rules or trying to what? Pass off as some... How can you blame somebody that's escaping a collapsing society and is saying, oh, here's a way to use paperwork to get past the brick walls that don't let me into a livable society that's trying to help their family? Like, I don't want to get into this area where we're saying the people who pretended to be Ukrainian are the despicable ones because you don't know what they've been escaping. Would you not, if those little kids in that picture of the Irish family, like look at the little one with the pacifier. If they were your kids, is there anything you wouldn't do to get them into a safe house? You wouldn't use whatever paperwork you could find?
So, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here.
Okay, let's unpack it then.
Okay, so people taking, using illegal passports to enter a country under the auspices that they are from Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you think that's okay?
I'm saying
and
I don't want
to... by the way, that's why I wanted to point out at the very beginning. These are not all people, like, coming from Yemen.
How do you know?
Because
where they're coming
not, because
from.
The report, as you would have seen, the reports are from Iraq, Nigeria, all sorts of other countries that have nothing to do with
this conflict, but this conflict. Also are living in pretty crappy situations.
Okay, so then the argument is that you should use just any fake passport you want and come into a country.
My argument is that human borders are bullshit. Period. There are places
now
that are safe for humans and there are places that are not.
Now we're getting to the heart of it.
And so I'm saying if that was my child there that didn't have a safe place to live, then there's nothing I wouldn't do.
Now that's
whatever document it took me.
That's why I'm showing up the ridiculousness of this, right? So Sweden can say, hey, no refugees allowed in our country unless you're a nice white guy from Ukraine.
Right. This is the part of the outrage, right? Is that we're saying, oh, we're doing all of these grandstanding, all this generosity for people who are only from this one conflict. And so anyone else who's going through these desperate, do you know how much it costs to get any kind of fake paperwork on the black market? Like this is something someone's had to work to do.
Right. So we're hitting on a couple of key points here that I wanted to bring up. Number one, there's an entire black market that's emerged around these passports. So there's people profiteering right now, as the German newspaper Bild has reported on. By the way, Germany has done remarkable reporting on this. And they're pointing out that this whole cottage industry of fake passports has now emerged to make all sorts of money off of this situation in Ukraine. So it's not helping the people of Ukraine. It's helping. It's you know, these people are profiting off of fake passports and they're basically sharing them with the rest of the world.
But is it helping people who have otherwise hit brick walls? In which case, I don't know that I have a problem with it.
But you're also then preying on people's generosity, too. So I'm helping someone from the country of Ukraine
or
to get people out.
Or pointing out the myopic viewpoint of certain people's generosity. Like that person there should only open his home to Ukrainians.
Perhaps. Maybe Benedict Cumberbatch, who was going to open his home to Syrian refugees and then realized that they were Syrians and not something else. And then he looked into it and decided he wasn't going to open his doors anymore to it. I mean, I think we're unpacking a lot of the hypocrisy around all this whole scenario. That's why
that's why we're doing this story.
Several people in the chat calling out like they're breaking the law. But the thing is, laws are just as man-made as borders.
Yes.
Just because it's a law doesn't mean it's just or right or the correct thing to do.
Well, I also think about if we want to use the example of Nigeria, right? So like Nigeria, like you have these artificial country lines that are drawn in Africa by white people. Colonialists who came to Africa and literally just drew lines across the middle
and
of Africa.
And then tell them what the law is here versus there, right?
Right. Or here, you're going to live in this particular country. There's no water source. There's no river. There's nothing. But we're going to plant you right in the middle here where you have artificial borders around you, so you have no access to fresh water.
Well, there I mean, you look at like the Tutus and the Houthis. Like that was like an imperialist sort of like, no, you people are now in the same country. And right. Rwanda did not work.
Right.
You know, yeah. So like exactly. We have a long track record of screwing that up.
So in some ways, that's why I wanted to unpack this, and because there's a lot of nuance to this story. There's absolutely a lot of nuance to this story, and there's no one like simple answer to it. The idea of like, hey, if you're Iraqi and you're looking for an opportunity to get out of that hellhole that we created, right? And you come to England. Like, isn't that a funny about face? Like the one of the very countries that destroyed your country is now having to harbor you, and you go on the some people are saying, oh, well, now you come to these countries and you're using up their welfare resources that are meant for the Scottish people, or they're
well, that's exactly what people in Sweden think happened to their economy is the influx of immigrants. Has basically, because in Sweden you can go there as an immigrant and then you're eligible for all social programs. And it's basically bankrupted that country.
Here's another group of Ukrainian, quote unquote, Ukrainian refugees as a reporter is asking them, because it's interesting if you think about it, like in Ukraine, if you're a man, 18 years old up to 60 and you're a Ukrainian citizen, you're not allowed to leave. Like you've got to stay and fight the Russians right now, right?
Yes.
So, okay, well, then how old are you? And these particular Ukrainians who have these passports were asked at one of the transportation hubs here, either airport or train station, you know, how old are you? And they said, oh, we're over 60 years old. You be the judge.
I ask you a few questions. You've arrived here at the refugee center here.
Yes,
sir. For Ukraine? Yeah.
Yes, sir, Ukraine.
Are you Ukrainians?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you flew in from?
From Ukraine.
From Ukraine.
Yes,
okay.
From Donetsk.
Okay.
City Donetsk.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you don't mind me saying so, you don't look like you're from Ukraine.
No, we just national of Ukraine.
You're just nationals of Ukraine. Passport. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so you're Ukrainian citizen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ukrainian citizen by origin. We are from Jammu Kashmir.
From Kashmir.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Still Indian. Kashmir. Okay.
So, India,
yeah. So I'm just an Irish journalist here, citizen journalist. So I'm just asking. We're concerned here in Ireland that they're taking in 200,000 people.
Okay. Yeah.
And we were being told that it's women and children are being taken in. So are you're claiming refugee status here now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we just heard reports that there are people coming from Middle East, Africa, or whatever, who aren't Ukrainians, who are coming in through this refugee center. And we were told as Irish citizens that it's women and children, you know. So how do you feel about that?
Good question. And if you think about what 200,000 people could do to a country that doesn't have, you know, the size and the girth of other countries, it can totally upend a society, right? So it's a legitimate question. Women and children. Huh, interesting. And what the 18 to 60 year old threshold for fighting fighting in Ukraine. And then they later claimed they were over 60 years old.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I'm having a hard time sympathizing with governments at this point that are choosing who gets what, you know, and then we're outraged that people don't follow the rules.
I have the problem with the hypocrisy of all of this. I mean, it's like we go in and we bomb Yemen.
Right.
We destroy your freaking country. We go to Libya. We go to Yemen. We go to Syria. We go to Ethiopia. We go to Kuwait. We go to Somalia. I mean, the list is endless. All of these Western imperialist powers that destroy these countries. And then we don't help them out. We leave them. And in the case of America with Afghan refugees, we deferred them. Oh, the 4,000 Afghan refugees that were going to come to the United States? No, we're going to send them to Canada. We're going to defer you to Canada, even though we destroyed your country for 20 years. But now Ukrainian, well, 200,000. Well, we will welcome 200,000 Ukrainians in the United States. The same
right.
thing with Ireland.
Come on in.
Come on in, because you're like us. You know, you're white people. You're white people. So come on in. I'm sure you won't disrupt society like maybe those Somalians would. Like, that's the hypocrisy that I can't get past.
Well, the same in Sweden, right? In Sweden, they have such a problem with people having this Iraqi, Iranian, and Middle Eastern immigrants, who they say have taken all their, like, drained their social health programs, Ukrainians will do the same thing. Like, someone who needs a doctor, it doesn't matter the color of your skin.
Right, but ignore that. Ignore that.
Right.
Maybe.
So it's only brown people that drain social systems,
right,
not but, white
well, it's
people,
it's
right?
Because the brown people had their whole lives disrupted and everything. The white people that are coming out, they were middle class, so they still got money. They're going to fund themselves. They're not going to need taken care of, like,
right,
you know, the ones that don't have any money or food or
right,
anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely they are. They're going to be, they're self-starters, you know?
Yeah.
They're just going to have their own business. They don't have to take anything from the society. You know, like when we moved, we had to show that we were able to sustain ourselves and weren't going to take from the social services of the country we moved to. Like, that's what you have to do, right? I think that maybe the solution to all of this is, hey, let's stop bombing other countries. Let's stop making people leave their homes and destroying their homes and their society. Maybe that's where it starts, instead mm-hmm. of like artfully trying to figure out exactly
like who gets where and who gets through what border. There's a beautiful piece of fiction, if you're not the kind of person who likes to read history books, called The Beekeeper of Aleppo, about Syrian refugees and what they had to get through to in order to leave their country, in order to prove who they were, in order to get into any kind of country and get refugee status. It is hard. It is expensive. It is very dangerous. It is not as a nice of a ride as it would seem that Ukrainian refugees are getting at this point. And I want to keep asking ourselves this question. Why do some people get at the front of the line? Why do we care more about some and not others? We can care about them all the same, but we choose not to.
Yeah, well said. All right, let's talk about big bombshell in the political world in the United States, and that is Hillary Clinton. So the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, it's hard to keep track of all of these different commissions that we have in the United States, has now slapped both the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democratic committee with a fine for lying. I mean, there's no way to put it to like parse this any other way. Lying about President Trump and the Steele dossier, using the Steele dossier, the now widely debunked and discredited Steele dossier, peddling misinformation, using that and lying about it in order to try to discredit President Trump in the run up to the 2016 campaign and beyond, even beyond his time as candidate and then President Trump. So this is a significant move. And we couldn't help but thinking about it this morning. You know, last week when we reported that President Trump filed a lawsuit against Hillary Clinton, like, wow, like that's a ballsy move. Like, you don't just file a lawsuit like that, because especially when you've just had come through like a Mueller investigation,
right?
You're going to open yourself up to all sorts of legal discovery process, which means, well, that the other side will get to see, ask to see all sorts of emails and documents. That must be pretty, you must have a fairly confident viewpoint of your position to say they were lying, they were discrediting me, they were using false information, we're going to call them out to the carpet on it, and now they, Hillary Clinton, is going to have to come forward and through legal discovery show what they were doing behind the scenes.
Right. So it's not Hillary Clinton personally. It's Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign and the Democratic National Committee, although Hillary Clinton was named personally in the Trump lawsuit, which last week we went over was so perplexing. Now, neither of these camps that paid the fines, they did not contest what they did, right? So this is what's interesting. It means that they don't say that, they don't admit to the findings, but they will not further contest it. They will pay the fines. And what are the fines are? It's about how they hired firms, like sort of like public relation firms, to take the Steele dossier, disseminate it far and wide, and discredit President Trump in order to decrease his chances of winning the presidency. Now, these payments can sort of count as either campaign contribution or a way that you're, publicizing your campaign or going after your opponent. But neither of these camps categorized them as such. Instead, they called it legal advice and services rather than opposition services. Do we care? Yes, we should, because Michael Cohen went to prison for suppressing the Stormy Daniels news because he did not want that to affect the election outcome. So this is the same side of both coins, right? It proves to us that both sides fought dirty, which I guess we should know. It shouldn't be surprising. But what's surprising is that now they're actually both equally punished, right? Michael Cohen was sent to jail. Hillary Clinton now is being fined, and she will face civil litigation. And we will find out a lot, because if the Trump campaign, as the plaintiff, can say, look, they paid fines to the FCC for doing exactly what I am accusing them of, and then this further cost me reputational damage, legal problems, all sorts of things, then they should reimburse me for it. So it's interesting, and it's dirty from both of them.
Yeah, and here's what the fine. And by the way, we should point out that the Clinton administration, or the Clinton team and the DNC, have agreed to pay this fine. They're agreeing to settle to this. They're basically copping to it.
Yes, they're saying they do not contest it, but they don't agree to it, but they don't contest it either.
So, but what the fine specifically laid out was by intentionally obscuring their payments through Perkins, Coy, and failing to publicly disclose the true purpose of those payments, the campaign and the DNC were able to avoid publicly reporting it on their statutorily required FEC disclosure forms that they were paying Fusion GPS to perform opposition research on Trump with the intent of influencing the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. So just a piece of the complaint.
But, yes.
You know, I mean, it's a paltry, I mean, $8,000 penalty, and then another $105,000 too. I mean, this is like...
And it's not clear whether this fine would be admissible in the court case against Hillary Clinton, but it does show that there's more fire here where there was smoke, right? Whereas... the media would have you seem that, you know, it was only Trump doing bad things to Hillary Clinton with the lock her up chants and the email server and that kind of thing. But it did seem that that was a set spike because Hillary Clinton was hitting it back by trying to discredit his campaign with the Steele dossier. Now,
well, and not even to mention what they did to Sanders, that whole DNC thing with the emails. Yes. And
yes. It does not seem like there. Why? Yeah, that's a good question. Why wouldn't there be fines for doing that to Bernie Sanders from the same commission?
Because he's not likely to press it because, you know,
that's his friend Hillary.
I'm starting to think that maybe, just maybe, both sides of the political aisle in the United States are corrupt.
Mm.
I'm feeling like maybe there's something there.
You might be onto something.
Yeah,
I'm thinking. It's just starting to look that way. I don't know. Right. I don't know. We might need to dig deeper into that.
I mean, this is why we posted the poll, right, David, on the community page. You know, at this point, you know, would you vote for either party anymore? I mean, you know, I've been voting for a third party since like 1998 or so. Both of these parties are corrupt. And all you need to do is look at what they did to Bernie Sanders. I mean, you literally had Debbie Wasserman Schultz out of Florida when her emails were hacked and leaked. She had to resign her position as DNC chair because she's like basically, you know, mocking Bernie Sanders in internal emails and talking about like their plan to discredit, like, here's our plan to discredit one of our own candidates.
And on that poll, I asked, will you vote a third party in the next election? 45% said yes, 28% no, and 27% could be convinced.
Your Imperial Majesty in the chat says that when she hears Trump versus Clinton, all she hears is wow, 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 which is true. But the problem is we got a page out of the same playbook in 2020 when, you know, the Hunter Biden story was suppressed. Now we have proof from the New York Times that that was a credible story when most of us were made to believe it wasn't.
Hold on. Let me correct you. No, the New York Post gave us the proof. The New York Times finally got around to admitting that the Post was correct.
Okay, right. But is this not the same thing, right? It's manipulating news that we can and cannot see in order to create an outcome in an election that is desirable to one side or the other.
Perhaps. And what is the mainstream media's responsibility in all of this? They still haven't come out and apologized for pushing night after night after night this BS Steele dossier. I mean, Rachel Maddow literally built her whole show around it.
Yes.
She literally built her whole career around this idea of the Steele dossier. Remember that night she came out and said she had bombshell revelation about Trump's taxes and it ended up not being anything? Like, how much more of that can you take, you know?
Yeah.
The Steele dossier was this report that was compiled by Christopher Steele, the British spy. It was financed by Democrats. It was filled with all sorts of lies and erroneous information. It was totally discredited. Even the FBI in 2017 talked about they didn't believe the veracity of it. And yet the mainstream media was complicit the entire time in this thing.
And not according to Rachel Maddow. She did say that the FBI had corroborated it.
Right.
She said that many times. And in the book Beyond Law, or something like that, by Andrew Wasserman, who was the lead investigator on the Mueller report, the investigation into President Trump preceded the Steele dossier. They were already looking into him way before the Steele dossier came out, but Andrew Weissman is his name, and the book is Inside the Mueller Investigation, Where Law Ends. But, you know, it was sort of Trump haters, people who didn't like Trump. And I found myself in this camp at the time really wanting to believe that the Steele dossier was real because I found President Trump so odious. But you have to go where the facts lead, and the facts do not support it. It does seem like it was a media ploy
for the
blue party.
And that's why Facebook and the mainstream media, they play off of like those conviction biases, right? So you have this like conviction bias against Donald Trump. And so what do you watch? Then you watch like a Rachel Maddow show.
Yes.
To support your already in place conviction bias, right? And I hope that this show, if nothing else, like we all have biases. Like nobody watching right now or who's on this show walks around without any biases. We all do, right? And so
I'm not wearing any bias right now.
You're not wearing any, I'm not wearing any pants. But we all walk around with these biases. And all I think it's so important is like, can you just always have like loosely held beliefs? Because, you know, facts present themselves. You should be able to swerve and move if facts present themselves.
Right. And it should breed our distrust in politicians for sure. But just like the next story we're going to talk about, it breeds distrust in the media because the media picked these up happily, right? Like Little Red Riding Hood skipping along a field, just picking up flowers. So the next story we're going to talk about is that Facebook has been paying a firm to malign TikTok, just like a jealous ex-girlfriend. And what did they do? They printed op-eds. They posted letters to the editor and major newspapers saying that, you know, Meta is the kind of current punching bag, but TikTok is the real threat, especially as a foreign-owned app that has, you know, is really sharing data that young teens are using. Yes, it's despicable that Facebook did this. It makes them out like a jealous ex. But the media took it, you guys. The media was happy to run with it. So who is to blame here? Who did the more bad thing?
Right.
I'm beginning to think that maybe corporations and the media are a bit corrupt.
You might be onto something.
Yeah, we might want to dig into that a little bit more.
This might be
you might need to rest after all these revelations.
I know. No, I'm like, my mind is just absolutely blown. It's almost as if.
That's like, it's almost as if there might be some coordination between the two.
I know. Imagine that they're actually having dinner and having meetings and like they get on the phone with each other and make this stuff happen. Like this is actually what's unfolding. I mean, this is why I put in the newsletter today, the Casablanca reference, you know, shocked. I'm shocked to see that gambling is going on inside your establishment, you know, because we all know that this is happening. But this campaign is pretty amazing. I mean, it's hilarious. Do they not think people are going to find this out? I just don't get it.
No, like, I don't think they think
that. I really don't. It's amazing to me. But the campaign included placing op-eds and letters to the editor in major regional news outlets promoting dubious stories about alleged TikTok trends that originated on Facebook and pushing to draw political reporters and local politicians into helping to take down its biggest competitor. These bare-knuckle tactics, it says, long commonplace in the world of politics, have become increasingly noticeable within a tech industry where companies vie for cultural reference and come at a time when Facebook is under pressure to win back users. So, of course, this delete Facebook hashtag has been trending. And I had to ask, like, who's using Facebook?
Like, your mom.
Well, that generation uses Facebook. Yes.
My mom.
Your mom.
I use
Facebook. David is of that generation. He uses Facebook.
I detest even if I have to, like, sometimes David will send me a link, and if it's a Facebook link, I'm like, yeah, I'm not opening that. I don't think I've
opened
Facebook.
Okay, so then what will it take?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What will it take to get our mothers off of Facebook? Because that's really
for Facebook to go down.
Push them to TikTok.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Well, I mean, we covered Facebook's quarterly earnings results, and it was in the toilet, right? I mean, it was, they lost 500,000 users, and this is a huge concern for Facebook.
Yeah.
This is the first time in the company's history that they didn't have a growth in customers, and not only not a growth, a decline, and also exacerbated by the fact that they are not able to acquire any more companies of that size. Remember, they were able to like grow by acquiring WhatsApp.
Yeah.
They bought Instagram, right? So they're like adding all of these additional users to their list by acquiring them. There's no way in the world Congress is going to allow them through a monopoly status to acquire a TikTok.
Which they would love to, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, they tried to. I mean, they tried to buy Snapchat.
Yeah.
They were rebuked. They weren't able to buy Snapchat. Snapchat was like, no,
yeah,
no, no.
Comcast is the only one they allow to be a monopoly. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm studying the chat to see if my mom is here because I'm going to be in big trouble for what
like,
I see.
We like, all like, know that generation uses
it. Facebook is like kind of a cesspool, but like TikTok, my daughter's into TikTok and she'll like show me. She's like, oh, Dad, check this out. This is so funny. I think you'll like this one. And she'll show me a TikTok and it's like 5 seconds long and there's 45 words on the screen. And it's like, by the time it's over, I'm like, I have no idea what just happened. I was like, she's like, isn't that funny? I was like, I don't even know what I looked at. Like,
yeah,
I was
trying. My son Miles will walk up to me like, he'll be like, Daddy, watch this. And I'll be like, what am I even seeing? Like, what is that? And he's like, oh, don't you see the cat that's doing this thing? And it's like bouncing its head to this like meme of that. I'm like, okay.
Although I was wondering to myself, because the kids like it so much, and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. It's 30 seconds. So I'm like, do I have a shorter attention span than my son who can watch these to see if they're funny? Like, he has 30 seconds per post to see if that's funny. And I'm like, no, I don't have time for that.
I mean, I will scroll TikTok for like an hour and I'm like, oh my God, where'd that hour go? And I'm just like,
yeah, some
oh my
people
God.
Are brilliant with that stuff. Like it's like the old Vine. Yeah. People could make really funny stuff in 15 seconds, but like a lot of them, like Jennifer watches these more educational things and it's like all this text on the screen and you got to pause, like hold it and pause. I'm like, that's a horrible experience. But one thing I don't want to do is try to push our moms over there, because the first time I go to TikTok and see my mom thinking, singing This Milkshake Brings All the Boys to the Yard or something, like, you know, lip syncing that, I don't want to see that.
Well, if you do find that, don't share it to me, because I mean, one, I don't know if
it's
open TikTok,
same
and two,
mom, man.
I know.
It's the same mom, but I don't want to see
all right,
that.
Let's let the moms stay on Facebook then.
Yeah,
it's a good community for the moms. Yeah.
As long as they never discover Reddit, we're fine.
I just got a text from your mom.
From my mom?
She's like, I'm listening.
Yeah. No, and it's good for that. I mean, it's good for that community,
but
I guess.
Is it that, like,
maybe not,
they're
because that
purposely manipulating what she gets to see? They know what it means to addict people of any generation. Like, I don't think we should say that, like,
well,
all right, fine. It's just for.
I'm wondering right now, like, how at fault Facebook is for my mom being QAnon.
Well, probably a lot, in fact. So we were both just reading. I finished it last night, this Nicole Perlroth book. She's an excellent journalist. She wrote a book about cyber attacks in the United States over the past 15, 20 years. She goes back in the 1980s. I mean, it's really exhaustive research that she spends with, like, different hacking communities and, like, I mean, infiltrates them and works with them and understands them. Really good journalist. And she talks about, you know, it's very easy to, like, discredit what Russia was doing. It was all Russia, Russia, Russia. But they did. Like, they set up proxy Facebook groups in, like, Texas specifically. They were feeding all sorts of, like, stuff about Hillary Clinton just to, like, stir the pot, because they supported Bernie Sanders. Like, their position as Russians were, we like Bernie and we like Trump, but we don't like Hillary. And they just wanted to stir the pot. And they set up fake groups. They set up fake Facebook groups. They posted all sorts of fake ads that about, you know, Hillary was going to take your guns and all this, like, and like all sorts of fake news and stuff. And you had people then were resharing that stuff, like resharing all of this fake news. But it wasn't, of course, just Russia. It was Cambridge Analytica. It was all of that stuff. It was all of those people involved in the, you know, spreading of misinformation, disinformation. And there's people that were sitting there on Facebook like, oh my God, literally Hillary is going to come to my house and take my kids away.
There's a journalist, and I don't have the article in front of me right now. It's been several years, but there's a journalist that looked into the anti-vax movement on Facebook and was able to trace about 90% of all anti-vax information back to 10 people, just 10 people, and they all sell nutritional supplements. And so you've got like all of this misinformation out there, but they're pumping it to ultimately sell their nutritional supplements.
and this journalist also tracked a huge portion of this anti-vax publications on Facebook back to these this Russian proxy group
in Ukraine.
Yep. In Ukraine,
that yep. was
there
yeah.
was that too. Yep. So they're it was like,
oh,
it was
and it's like they just enjoy it. It's like, oh, just how do we stir the pot in America? And actually, this group said they were stunned that Americans actually fell for it. They're like, really? They fell like, and yeah, their people would share it. Like, can you believe that Hillary Clinton literally eats pig hearts? You know, and they're like, yeah. like
and they found like a lot of these memes that get around the like the political memes. There was I don't know if it was the same journalist or another journalist where they tracked it back to like this PR firm in Indonesia that was behind like a lot of these. So it's like when that's why like because anytime somebody shows me like the meme that's like a picture with a bunch of facts on it, I'm like, I immediately don't believe it. Just right. like that's my default is when I see a picture with facts on it, I'm like, I do not believe this.
No,
like just by default.
Yeah.
That's well, the thing is, like, we've got, live by.
We don't have any media that tells us the truth. So it's like everybody's so desperate to find information. And it's like if we had a media that like reported the truth and, you know, like actually did blocked. News again, you could, you know, you could have some semblance of, OK, this is what's going on. And you could like because people get behind these one issue things and they plant their flag on that issue. So it's like then that's their mission is to teach everybody about that issue. And the media like eggs that on the government propaganda eggs it on.
It's like the don't say gay bill. Like nowhere in that bill does that say that, you know, at all. And so reporters just regurgitate that kind of stuff and the media foments it. And you're right. And it takes shows like this, I hope, you know, independent media that we're not bought and sold by billionaire corporations. We don't make any money from billionaires running our show, that we get to cover these stories and hopefully break them down so people are more informed about it.
All right, we're going to move on to what's trending now. Yes. These are things that are trending on the internet, and we love to see what you have to say about them in the chat or in the comments below.
You know, before we get into this, do we want to throw chat up for the what's trending so we can see what everybody's saying?
Yeah.
Can you just do that?
Yeah.
Done.
Look at you.
I was thinking about that yesterday. I was like, man, there's like people talk so much about this when we're doing your trending. I'm like trying to scroll through and grab the right ones. I was like, let's just open it up.
All right, guys, let's see what you have to say about hashtag Binjin Wedding. This is trending because actors Hyun Bin and Son Yi Jin were recently married and they released these lovely photos of their wedding. Hang on, let me see if I can.
I thought you were getting ready to say Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez were getting married and they're calling them Benjin now instead of.
Nope, this is a different Bennifer type. Look how pretty though they both are. Look, check this out, you guys. This. Look at that. Okay, people are going crazy because these actors are famous.
I used to get mad when my pants were short like that.
Oh, no, this is the way now.
Whoa.
And okay.
Mandalorian.
Yes. Hashtag, just the word aphasia is trending because actor Bruce Willis and his family announced that he will retire from acting due to a diagnosis of aphasia. Aphasia is a neurological condition that affects one's ability to communicate. Sometimes it happens after a stroke, but the family hasn't confirmed that this is the reason. But this is a post by his daughter, Rumor Willis, saying this is a hard time for us. He's had a long career, but he is going to pack it in and not make any more movies or shows.
Wow.
Is that what Robert Kennedy has, Jr.? Or is
aphasia?
That...
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I don't know what he has. No.
Eric Church is trending because the country music star canceled a sold-out concert this weekend so that he can watch a Final Four basketball game.
What a dick.
This show is, well, okay, wow. Let's discuss whether or not this is a dick move. Look at his statement right there. This is what people who bought a ticket to the concert received from him. He says, I'm a lifelong Carolina basketball fan. I've watched Carolina and Duke battle over the years. This matchup is like something I've been waiting for my whole life. I know this is selfish, but I can't do a show if he feels like he has to do it. So the sold out show.
Can he just like set the VCR to record it and watch it after?
He doesn't know how to do that.
That is crazy alien technology you're talking about right now.
Dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
Record live TV.
In a rerun.
Maybe so. He could put it on stage with him, like on a giant screen, and like sing along with it.
He'd just be sort of like forgetting the words to his own song.
I know. I just think there's, yes, he says, okay, great. This is the most selfish thing I've ever asked the choir to do. No, it's a very selfish thing on your behalf because think about it. people bought these tickets for someone else for like a birthday present, probably a Christmas present.
Yeah.
Like this was your big Christmas present.
Somebody's traveling to the show.
Someone's traveling
to the show. I hope your team loses.
Yeah, they've already booked. They've already booked hotels. I mean, the only way I could see this being acceptable is if the concert was in Alabama.
Okay. I don't remember where the concert is.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, I just think it's really selfish because then it's like
that is very selfish.
Like you're okay,
those fans are what made you. Those fans are what are going to give you the possibility to sit sideline.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so now all those people that made their plans, you're basically telling those people, this is like when, you know, I'm not a fan of people being late for things, right? Because I think what it says to that other person or to you, or you're basically saying you're less important than me, right?
Yes.
You're basically saying like my time is more valuable than yours, basically. And so I think that's what it kind of speaks to. It's like, hey, you booked a ticket, you booked, you know, you to come here on this weekend to be here with your loved one for a birthday or whatever.
Well, we made a commitment. I was going to sing to you and you bought a ticket, right? But I don't want to handle my side of this commitment because there's a sports that I care more about.
Yeah.
So
yeah, if it was something other than sports, you know, maybe, but like the fact that it's a sports match, like, come on.
Right.
Well, would it be worse though if he were caught, like if he pretended he was sick, and then he were caught like going to an event or going to the game, that would be worse.
MG3 says, "Who cares? He gets to choose what he does. He could have BS'd and called in sick."
Yeah,
I guess like if you're a fan of Eric Church, then that's on you, right? Like,
yeah.
And then I get to choose to be a fan or buy an album of his ever again. You know?
Yeah, but just be a person of your word. If you sell that ticket, and the obligation is I will be there to do my job, and so it's like it's a social contract to then be like, yeah, I'm not going to uphold my end of it. I mean, that's to me, that's pretty shady.
Yeah, I'm going to take all my Chris Church, whatever his name is, CDs today and burn them. I'm not listening to him anymore.
You
I'm
don't
done.
Have any
Chris Church. It's Eric Church, and
Eric Church,
I never heard of the guy until today.
So. Actually, he's kind of an affable character, and so online, some people are saying, it's refreshing honesty. All right, then. But I don't think most of those people had tickets for the show.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Northern Lights / Aurora Borealis is trending because some people in the U.S. were able to see it this week in places that one cannot normally see it, as far south as Chicago due to unusual solar activity.
I want to go to Norway and stay in one of those like little snow bungalows and watch this.
That would be cool.
Well,
they were
you could
visible
do it
in
from
Portland.
Chicago.
They What's were that? Visible in Portland last night. But it was overcast, so we couldn't see them.
Oh.
So then it wasn't visible.
It wasn't visible. So they were there. They were just over the clouds.
Mm. And finally, To Kill a Mockingbird is trending after California Mayor Gavin Newsom published this tweet of himself. That one. Yes, that one. Reading books that he says he wants to figure out what these states are so afraid of. Except that To Kill a Mockingbird was banned by a city in California 2 years ago. So he is 2 years late on this reading assignment, and we give him an F.
I love this virtue signaling. Like, here's my stack of books I'm reading.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got Mouse.
1984.
He's got Mouse, 1984. And I'm just going to sit. I'm not moving from this seat because the reason I have all of these books in front of me right now is because I'm going to read them right here in this sitting right now.
Yeah.
And who stacks books like that?
Yeah, I was going to say, that is so strategically like, That is publicity right there. Because, who stacks books that way?
This is obnoxious.
No one's. You're right.
We are agreed on this.
You're right, Ray. No one stacks books like this.
Yeah. You know, I used to be a reporter for the San Francisco Examiner. And at the time, I was in my 20s, and all of us sort of fawned all over Gavin Newsom and Kimberly Guilfoyle because they were like the first couple. They were like John and Caroline Bessette. They were so beautiful. And everyone just wanted to be in his presence. But this is just such an obnoxious, like a lot of things that it seems like he does are self-serving these days. And the bloom is off the rose.
Good.
Definitely.
In my opinion. So, yeah. I mean, and that is funny because he should know that that book was banned in California, To Kill a Mockingbird. But he's like, he's calling out, what are other states so afraid of? Like in California, we are enlightened, but in other states, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Again, this is the problem with wokeness, right? Because when you go woke, you realize you leave out huge chunks of hypocrisy. You ignore the hypocrisy.
Yes.
Right. So you get to virtue signal. You get to change your Twitter handle to a Ukrainian flag icon, and you just get to ignore all. You get to ignore Yemen, Somalia war, anything else. You just get to focus on the signal that you're trying to send. And that's the problem with wokeness.
Yes, among many things.
Disney's experiencing this right now with that whole meeting that they had and the whole, you know, their whole woke move. It's like, it's okay for them to like go after the don't say gay bill in Florida. And yet it's not okay for them to like, it's also okay for them to funnel money to China and to thank the Chinese government for shooting Milan in where they're like literally having a genocide against religious Uyghurs. So that's fine.
I don't know what is okay anymore.
That's fine. It's all good.
It's all okay good. And none of it is.
It's all good, baby, baby.
All right, let's go to some super chats and then get out of here. Also, before we do that, I want to remind you that tomorrow is our last morning show. So the morning part of Morning Invest is going to move, but your newsletter will not. Your newsletter will still be in your inbox every morning. So make sure you're subscribed, morninginvest.com. Next week, this show moves to the afternoon hour, which is 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Be there. Your subscriptions will still be good. We will still be here. We will still bicker just as much. And if not more, because it's a later hour for me and I'm a cranky beast.
And we'll dicker too. Also, I should point out, I heard something that Stephen Crowder said the other day, and I think it bears repeating. YouTube is crap at sending out notifications. They are crap at sending out emails to let you know that we are live. So just know that we on this channel will be live every day at that time. So you don't have to wait for a YouTube notification. We will be live at the same.
Unless YouTube takes us down, of course.
Yes, and unless YouTube censors us, which they have before. But we'll be somewhere. We'll be live on Rumble. We're working on our new website, which, you know, all of that. So we'll have other places to go. But we will be live every hour, every time at that same hour.
And for you guys that have your morning routine, because I see a lot of people like, oh, I'm not going to be able to watch the show anymore. So what we're going to do for you guys is we're going to replay the evening show in the morning for you guys as a premiere so you can still chat. Because I know you guys, like some of you have your morning coffee with everybody here and you chat. So we're going to still give you that for a while and we're going to see how that goes.
You'll get the full show and then we'll jump in and we'll be in the chat as well. So we'll have the full show at that same hour, at the same time. So we're going to try that out and hopefully that'll work pretty well for us. So
yeah, it won't be live, but
yeah. Yeah. Like Nefak, in our chat says, yes, Clayton, you have it. I have all your notifications always have and turned on for you, but you're not receiving the notifications,
but always have to dig.
Okay. You always have to dig for it. Yeah. See, that's the thing. With these anyway. All right, any super chats that we didn't touch on during the show?
Okay, so we've got Rumpel Gold. We don't mind Grover. He's a comfort sound. And then Kathy now. LaCroix, we love our Grover. Then Sabi, mom, dad, weak man, keep creating hard times. Not sure.
Yeah, that was, you know, talking about Biden and like this idea like weak men create hard times. Yeah, it's true.
Moon, none of your business. The people shown may have come from Ukraine. There were black folks that were in Ukraine that Poland wouldn't let in. Those were, the students. I remember the story of the students. Jason Frank, the U.S. can't try and save the world similar to the Giving Tree as well as space property within the U.S. It's not infinite, nor is it our money.
Right, but can the U.S. then with impunity destroy other places? And then keep borders closed to those places that are destroyed. Right?
That's in the sequel to The Giving Tree, The Taking Tree.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to read the sequel.
Okay. Didn't know that.
Rumpel Gold, did you all see Biden's disastrous press conference yesterday? I laughed so hard and nobody has posted about it.
Was it the one we spoke about yesterday or a different one?
Are you thinking about it? Because I didn't see.
I show one yesterday.
But yeah, we showed it yesterday. I'm not sure if that's the one you're talking about, but he's speaking today. Might have been a gap in that. I didn't see him speak on anything important yesterday.
I actually had a dream last night that I was at one of his speeches and he was like leaning in on the podium and was just going, and I was like, what the heck is going on? And I got my phone and I was recording it.
I had a dream I got slapped by Will Smith last night. True story.
Wow. Where were you?
Yes, I did.
What did you say about Jada?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything.
Did you see a video surfaced of him threatening a Spanish television news anchor with her standing right there? Like, watch what you say about my wife. Like, watch what. And he was like ready to hit the guy.
No.
So that surfaced.
Well, did you see that? Did you see the clip that's resurfaced of him on Arsenio? Making fun of one of the musicians in Arsenio's house band that for being bald, the guy had alopecia. Okay. And then his response to it was like, it's just a joke, man.
Oh, well.
I mean, I love the internet. Like, how in the world would we find this crap? I mean, really? Someone found a clip of Will Smith criticizing a guy with alopecia and saying it's just a joke, man.
Like, you know, I had lots of problems with the fat jokes on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So, like, no one ever held his feet to the fire for jokes.
But yeah, about that, his appearances that, yeah, that's that had writers that wrote that.
Yeah, but you can choose to say it. Or
yes,
not,
and
right?
I think he had a producer credit on that show too. So, like, let's not say that he is only capable of upstanding comedy.
It's not like he's Will Ferrell in Anchorman. Like, he doesn't even know the words that are coming out of his mouth as a news anchor. Like, I'm Ron Burgundy. Who put a question mark in the prompter? He'll read anything you put there. Like, he's a human being. You know, he can make decisions on his own.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's like before the internet, though, we had like, what, that one woman. Have you ever heard the story? Like that one woman in Chicago that for whatever reason recorded television like 24/7 throughout the 80s. Like she just like had her and she just literally recorded everything that came on TV. And so it's like this huge archive of just like this one channel all through the 80s. And
is
like,
it digitized?
I don't know if it's digitized. I'll have to look it up, but it shouldn't be too hard to find. But I think she was in Chicago, and this woman just like she was just this older woman that just for whatever reason recorded everything, and it's one of the like most complete archives of television during that time that you can find.
Rumble Gold just super chatted and said Biden had a press conference at 1:30 yesterday on COVID.
Oh yeah. Okay, yes, you're right. Sorry, my mind went blank. I did see part of it. I didn't watch the whole thing though. I saw two clips from it this morning.
And then two more super chats. Rumpel Gold, I got to go back to flagging, but update, there's a new email. As of yesterday, Game of Thrones has been bumped to August 22nd. Edit delays.
Yes. Jeez. The House of Dragons, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Caesar E, super chat. What is this, TMZ now?
Yes, because this is the first time we've done the what's trending thing, so yeah. I can get people being surprised
we're TMZ promoting Trump supporter Russian apologists.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And we're and our new boss is Harvey Weinstein.
So, yes.
That's why I'm a billionaire.
We're making a lot of good changes.
We got good benefits though. We got health insurance. So
I make no apologies for what we care to talk about. We choose what we want.
Right.
Yeah.
So
because who
I wanted to talk about Bruce Willis. I like the guy.
Yeah.
So
I hear he's really bad to work with though on a set.
Apparently he's a big dick.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't care. I was just a fan of Moonlighting.
Oh, he's in that?
Oh, taking it way back.
Dude.
Oh, wait, Moonlighting. I was thinking of the show that Philip just said.
Moon Knight. Yeah,
Moon Knight.
Natalie's response to that absolutely cracked me up. Like, dude.
Yeah, no, I know Moonlighting. I'm sorry.
Okay. If you were there, she'd have slapped you. I'm
if
pretty
looks
sure.
Could kill.
She would have slapped you.
I felt that slap from Portugal.
Oh, man.
All right, we're going to go. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. Thank you for being here. Hit the like button if you would, please, and share the show with your friends. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, everyone.